The topic is taxes. This week in Washington, the House of Representatives voted down a tax reform bill by the astonishing margin of 427-1. Neither Democrats nor Republicans wanted that particular tax package, but each one has been proposing its own, having difficulty, of course, in deciding what should be done. So, for example, the Bush administration is proposing a 7-point package of tax breaks, largely for businesses and for investors, and the Democrats are counter-proposing a 6-year plan, involves $93.5 billion, and it focuses on reduction of taxes to the middle class and an increase in taxes to the richest 1% of Americans. And so the lines have been drawn, and it seems as if there is very little compromise, so much so that House Majority Whip David Bonnier, who is from Michigan, summed all of this up, saying, "There's really only one question worth asking. Whose side are you on?" Now, the politicians in Jesus' day had a tax question as well. And they posed it in a way that you had to choose being on one side or the other. And they really didn't care which answer Jesus gave, because they were trying to trap him. Trap him into getting himself into trouble, no matter how he responded to something of a trick question. The conversation is recorded in Matthew chapter 22, beginning in verse 15. That to be found on page 1535. "Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. 'Teacher,' they said, 'we know you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?' But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, 'You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me the coin used for paying the tax.' They brought him a denarius. And he asked them, 'Whose portrait is this? And whose inscription?' 'Caesar's,' they replied. Then he said to them, 'Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's.' When they heard this, they were amazed. So they left him and went away." Today, if you have a tricky tax question, the solution is sort of simple. You dial 1-800-829-1040. Sort of has a ring to it. But in those days, if you had a tricky tax question, you went to Jesus and asked him what the solution should be. The question that they asked him was straightforward enough, or so it seems. Is it okay to pay taxes or not? But those that asked him made for a strange political alliance, one bonded together primarily to embarrass Jesus. They were of two parties, you might call them political parties, long out of existence, the Pharisees and the Herodians. But you could easily make some modern comparisons. The Pharisees were the religious right-wingers. They were conservative, and they were against the paying of taxes. They thought it a disloyal and inappropriate thing to pay taxes to the Roman government. The others were the Herodians, and they were the left-wing liberal party. They were the collaborators with the Roman occupiers, and they not only thought that it was okay to pay taxes, they thought it was something that a religious person should rightly do. This tax bill that was defeated 427-1 in Congress this past week actually did join together Democrats and Republicans in their vote, even though their politics, their principles, their philosophies are very different. And that's because neither of them liked the bill that they were dealing with. It isn't that they could agree on what should be done, but they were united on what shouldn't be done. Well, in those days, neither of those political parties liked Jesus. It isn't that they could agree on the right thing. They were just convinced that Jesus was the wrong thing. And so both groups wanted to conspire together against him. They met together in secret session, maybe the only time they ever did anything like this in all of their histories. And they planned their approach very carefully so that they would send spokesmen with very carefully rehearsed words. They spoke in public to make sure that Jesus didn't have time to think it through, to try to put the pressure on him in a public forum. It was a setup. They started out by saying, "Teacher, we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are." Actually, that was pretty much true, pretty much an accurate description, although I doubt that they believed a word of it. What they were seeking to do was to set up Jesus in order to make a fool out of him. And maybe that's happened to you. Maybe you've had someone who comes to you and wants to get something from you or wants to put you down, but starts out the conversation often with other people around to hear, or maybe writes a letter with a copy to somebody else that lays it on thick on what a wonderful person you are, just how great. And as you read it, even though you have not come to the second page or the final paragraph that has the punch, you're suspicious already. You know that there's something wrong. You know that this flattery is insincere and inappropriate. You don't like it, and Jesus didn't like it either. But once they had set the trap, they were ready to spring it. And this is how they did it. They said, "Jesus, tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" That was a trick question. It didn't make any difference how he replied. It's like some of the old philosophical questions, such as, what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object? You can stay up all night thinking about that. There's no good answer, because if you accept the question, you've accepted that there is both an irresistible force and an immovable object, and the one contradicts the other, and the question really can't be answered. Or the theologians who sit around in back corners with too much time and ask the question, could God make a rock so big he can't pick it up? And if you have trouble sleeping tonight, think about that. It'll put you right to sleep. It's a sure cure for insomnia. Or the old trick question, have you stopped beating your wife? I mean, it just doesn't make any difference how you answer the question. You're in trouble no matter what is your response. And that was the kind of question that they asked Jesus. Every word carefully chosen. For example, they asked about taxes, plural, because the Romans laid three different taxes on the Hebrew people of Palestine in the first century. The first of those was what they called a ground tax. And since most of the people were farmers, most of them had to pay it. According to the ground tax, 10% of all of the grain that you raise had to go to the Roman government, either in kind or in currency that was equivalent. If you raised or produced a wine or oil, the tax was 20%. So all those that produced had to pay their 10 or 20% tax. Then there was an income tax. That was a flat tax of 1% of all income. And then there was a head tax. The head tax was one denarius per year per person for males between the ages of 14 and 65 and females between the ages of 12 and 65. It's kind of hard to adapt or carry over currency values from a different place and time into our economy today. But one way of kind of figuring it is that a denarius was equal to an average person's income, a worker's income, for 1 1/3 days. So you'd have to work 1 1/3 day to get enough money for a denarius. Which meant then, if it was a husband and a wife and a teenage child, that the tax would be 3 denarii, which would take about 4 days of work in order to produce that. Now, I say all that, and there are people who are thinking to themselves, I don't know, sounds a lot better than the IRS to me. I'm willing to go back there and do that. 1% tax? Sure, why not? And I don't have any kids those ages. But, you know, nobody likes to pay taxes. Nobody likes to pay taxes at any point. But there was more to it than just the paying out of the money. There were some very deep issues that these people were struggling with. These taxes were going to a Roman government that had conquered and occupied their land. They hated them, Romans. And they knew that every coin they paid in to the Roman treasury went to things that they were against. So, for example, if they paid their money in, it would be used to pay the salary of the Roman soldiers who took over their country and hurt their people. Second of all, it would be used to support the state religion, which was a heathen religion that had a heathen temple, heathen temples all over the empire, that proclaimed that Caesar was God, that had pagan sacrifices, that had gross immorality, and their money would support that. And if all of that wasn't enough, they had a whole long list of the things that the Roman government sanctioned and supported that were absolutely contrary to what the Hebrew Bible taught. And their money would be used to do those wrong things. So they're deeply offended by these taxes. Not only the money, but the symbols that went with them. But there was one tax that was especially painful. You see, the coins for the head tax had Caesar's image minted into them. They were silver coins, had Caesar's image and Caesar's inscription, and they were the only currency acceptable for the paying of the head tax. Actually, it was most offensive, because among the Ten Commandments was the order from God that the Jews were to have no graven image. And the understanding in ancient times that the minting of a monarch's head on a coin and then the use of that coin meant acknowledgement that that person was the rightful king and emperor. The coin in every way was offensive to a Jew. So offensive, in fact, that for everyday commerce in Palestine, the Romans accommodated them by minting a separate copper coin that had no image on it, because otherwise the Jews wouldn't have been willing to do business. But while that could be used for everyday business dealings, it was required that the silver denarius, and it alone, could be used for the paying of the tax, and that that tax was to be deposited to the temple of Jupiter Capitolinus in Rome. So they knew they had Jesus. They had him either way. If he said, sure, go ahead, pay the taxes, then they would say, you are guilty of idolatry and blasphemy, and the religious community would turn against him. On the other hand, if he said, no, don't pay the taxes, don't pay any of that money, then they would turn him over to the Romans, he would be accused and tried for insurrection and perhaps executed. So either way, they had it. I don't know about you, but I hate it when I'm faced with what we call today a no-win situation. It doesn't make any difference how you reply or how you respond, because somebody's going to be mad at you no matter what you do. So you're in trouble either way. But Jesus was just brilliant in the way he handled this. For on the one level, he directly addressed the question that they asked, but he went right through that question, penetrated it, and answered a question that they had never anticipated nor seen in their own tricky little approach. His penetrating personal answer was to give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. But before answering, he read their intentions, and their intentions were evil. Hey, they weren't looking for whether they should pay their taxes or not, and they were not interested in whether they should rightly love God or not. They were with evil out to get Jesus. And I think that we all know that the intent of a question makes a great deal of difference. If somebody walks up to you at work or at school and they ask you a question, their tone of voice, their reason for asking the question, largely dictates your response. If somebody is open, seeking, sensitive, gracious about it, really wants to learn, you'll take the time to teach them. Most of us will. We'll explain and we'll process, we'll do all of that. But if somebody comes at us who is mean-spirited, who is evil in intent and out to get us, then we think to ourselves what Jesus thought. This person needs to be confronted right here on the spot. So Jesus confronted them. He exposed them for exactly who they were and what they were doing. And he said, "You hypocrite, why are you trying to trap me? You don't want to answer the question. You just want to trap me." So what Jesus did, again, brilliant, is he let them walk into their own trap. He, some would say, stooped to their level by trapping them back. But that isn't so. Jesus knew their hearts. He read their heads. And he knew that the only way to deal with them and to teach them was on their own terms. And so Jesus said, "Show me the coin used for paying the tax." Now the humor of this kind of has to grow on you. You need to think about this for a little while to catch on to what he was saying. So here are people who are coming to Jesus and they're saying, "We wouldn't have anything to do with these coins. These coins are terrible things. They have a heathen image on them and we wouldn't touch them and they're disgusting. And yet we have to pay the taxes and that's the law. So what should we do? Oh, Jesus, this is really a problem." And Jesus says to the guy who would never touch one of these coins, "Give me the coin." The guy says, "Oh, okay." So he reaches in his pocket. And he says, "Here." Well, Jesus didn't have to say another word. The guy already did himself in by the fact that he could reach in his pocket and come up with one of these things. I suppose if you're trying to make an equivalent in 1992, it would be like the guy who invites Jesus over to his house and sits down in the family room with him and says, "Jesus, I'm really struggling with an issue in my life, and I just don't know what to do. I need your advice." It's over watching X-rated videos. And you know, I've thought about this, and I don't want to do it. I wouldn't do it until first I find out what you think, because I want to go along with what you think. Now, I know that I can have freedom in Jesus Christ, and there's grace and forgiveness. So I guess it's okay. But then I think, well, maybe pornography might pollute my mind and affect my behavior, and that wouldn't be good. Jesus, before I do anything, I just want you to tell me what you have to say. And Jesus says, "X-rated? Pornography? What exactly do you mean?" And the guy says, "Oh." He takes out his channel changer, pushes the button, says, like this tape that I've got here, you know, why don't you just look at that? Well, the guy's dead. I mean, obviously, he's already made the decision. He's not honestly asking for Jesus' counsel or advice or the correct solution to the moral dilemma. He's obviously not sincere. So Jesus had this guy already. But with the denarius in hand, Jesus said, "Whose portrait is this? And whose inscription is on it?" Well, the obvious answer was Caesar's. Jesus said, "Okay, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. If he minted it, if he made it, give it back to him." So that solves the problem of having the coin. Now, in saying that, Jesus acknowledged the necessity of paying taxes and living with a government that is neither righteous nor just. I suppose that we would summarize it by saying that disciples of Jesus are to pay their taxes. But next, Jesus addressed the far greater and far deeper issue. For he added the words, "And to God, what is God's?" Because taxes and coins really don't much matter. You don't think so? You talk today to someone whose life is hanging and may die before today's over, and you ask them how important money is, or you ask them where they're at in regard to paying their income taxes on April 15th, and they will tell you those things do not matter at all. They're not issues. They're nothing. So in the large scope of life and eternity and what we are all about, taxes and money are nothing. What really matters is not what belongs to Caesar, but what belongs to God. Question. If Caesar's image and ownership are stamped on a coin, and that means that the coin belongs to him, where is God's image and ownership stamped? Answer. On us. For we humans are created in the image of God. And he, as our creator, has every right to claim ownership of our lives. We belong to him. So if coins belong to the government, then our lives are to be given to God. As far as we're concerned, there's a little question you've got to ask. And then a huge question that's got to be answered. The little question is, are you going to give your tax money to the government on April 15th? And the Christian answer is, yes. That's the little question. The big question is, have you given your life to God? Have you as clearly and fully and as demonstrably given your life to God as you have or will write out a check to pay taxes to Washington or to St. Paul by the deadline in 1992. For Christians are those who give their tax money to the government, but far more important, Christians are those who give themselves to God. Now the conversation concluded, and they were amazed. So they left him and went away. It's interesting, isn't it? There's no indication that they gave either their money or themselves. I've got something I want you to do. Would you take out a dollar? You can keep it. I want you to take out a dollar bill, all right? If you don't have a dollar, a nickel will work on what we're going to do, but not as well. And if you don't have a dollar or a nickel, someone near you, I'm sure, will give you one. Now, turn it over. So you're looking at the back, Washington down, okay? Because if Jesus were doing this today, he obviously wouldn't be using a denarius. He'd be using one of these, right? Okay, so look at the back, and Jesus would say, what's the inscription? And the inscription across the top is the United States of America. And then in smaller, all capital block letters, under that, it says, in God we trust. So you see, it's really as simple and as plain as the back of a dollar bill. The money's printed by the government, so we can say, the money belongs to the government. But it is in God that we trust, that we belong to him. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God's.